Lunchtime Live on News Talk.
Thanks to VideoDoc. See a GP online anytime for prescriptions and sick notes. Download the VideoDoc app. VideoDoc.ie.
This is Ciara and this is a Lunchtime Live podcast from News Talk. If you like what you hear, don't forget that you can subscribe via the app or on iTunes and make sure to check us out at newstalk.com/lunchtimelive. Thanks for listening.
Now, you may have heard there on the news with Stephanie that Housing Minister Owen Murphy is before the Oireachtas Housing Committee today, and this is to do with the whole Rebuilding Ireland loan scheme. They are denying that they have run out of funds. They are saying that isn't what has happened. They may need to put more funds into it, and they're saying that it isn't frozen, although some local authorities are saying something a little bit different to that. The scheme was supposed to run for 3 years, but in 13 months the allocation of 200 million has been exceeded. And joining me now to discuss where we go from here, and if you're in the unfortunate position perhaps to be going through looking and applying for a Rebuilding Ireland home loan, where do you stand now, is Carl Dieter, financial advisor and analyst at Irish Mortgage Brokers and Yes.ie. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Ciara.
Are you well?
Yeah, I don't look as happy as you today, but
I'm always happy.
Things are going okay, yeah.
I'm just, you know, living the dream. Tell me this. First up, is it a good scheme? Is the Rebuilding Ireland scheme something that is useful, something that you would see as a tool in the arsenal of fighting our housing situation?
Yeah, well, you have a situation where a lot of people want to try and get a house, and whatever about the difficulty of finding houses, affording a house is also a big problem. And so there was always this gap in the market for people who weren't able to get loans from banks. Now, within the kind of the mortgage industry, if someone came to you and said, look, I can't get this person a loan here, there, anywhere, what's the situation? You'd say, look, they're a banger, cast them out, move on. And those people are real lives, and they want an answer, and they can afford to pay rent, but they don't qualify for estate housing. And so this was a way of doing that. And so when people say, oh, this is disgraceful, I want to get back to this issue that we have where politicians, especially opposition politicians, are so busy coughing up a furball on something every single day that they want us to exist in a state of near permanent panic so that we're like elevated adrenaline all day, every day, constant shock horror. I'm sorry, but if a scheme that was meant to help buy people was oversubscribed, then imagine how many people it's helped. That is a good thing. And if you say it's not, I think you're a bit of a tool, but look, people can disagree on things all the time.
557 people have drawn down loans. Another 1,000 have been, I suppose, deemed eligible for these loans. So we're on about 1,500 people.
So in mortgage lending, you've got like written business and closed business. And by the way, so when they're saying that it hasn't run out, what people are doing is saying that all of the applications may have gone beyond it. But that doesn't mean that all those loans have drawn out. And by the way, assuming that people do pay for those loans, we're going to get all that money back with interest. Again, not necessarily a bad thing. And if housing is the crisis that we're constantly told it is, then no one in the opposition can come out moaning about this. Because at the same time, what was the overrun in health last year? You know, a couple hundred million?
Like 8, I think. Yeah, and that's so, before we take into account the National Children's Hospital.
Yeah. So like if we're happy to do that for what we feel is another thing in permanent crisis, but we are aware that there's a very serious housing crisis, then, you know, this is small beer.
I do think that it seems to be getting lost in the ether. This is a loan scheme. People are supposed to pay these loans back. So it's not actually money going down the toilet. It's actually money that will be paid back over time to the exchequer.
A lot of them won't now. I mean, let's be honest. When the state runs loan schemes, they quite often have off the chart levels of arrears. And this is kind of in the subprime space because you're looking at lending to people who wouldn't have qualified with a regular bank. But that is part of, you know, that's part of the way things are, is you take a chance on people, and banks won't take a chance on them, but the government will. Some of the loans will work, some won't. But there's a huge amount of good being done by that. So, like,
it's an interesting point that you're suggesting that the government is unlikely to become the evictor of people who are in arrears. So that this is open to what is sometimes referred to as moral hazard in the lending arena, is it?
Yeah, well, what would happen is you would have a person who will not go ahead. You see, the whole thing is the banks have a certain set of rules and it's covered under the kind of the umbrella of financial regulation. But when the state goes into being the bank, they're not covered by those rules. So 3.5 times income, that's a rule. You know, you can't go above 90% of a loan. That's a rule. With the home buying scheme run by the state, none of those rules apply. They can actually do whatever they want.
So looking at, I've heard things like five times the combined incomes.
Oh, yeah. That. Like, they can do Celtic Tiger stuff that everyone else would be dragged over the coals for doing. If you even, not even if you did it once, but if you even had the thought, they'd be like, that's thought crime. Quick, you know, witch hunt that person into the ground. But the state can do it and do it all day long.
Are there elements that we should be concerned about this loan scheme? For example, Carl, one of the reasons that, despite our very short supply of housing stock at the moment, the tight strings, the tight purse strings that the banks continue to hold, which was very different to the bubble and the Celtic Tiger where credit was so loose, that's preventing this spike in house prices. Our house prices are relatively flat, are growing.
It's really not, though.
Will this scheme that will allow more people into the mix, despite stock not being there, additional stock, not fuel a rise in prices?
No. You see, the whole thing is people look at something and they say, oh, you know, prices are rising. Well, guess what? If you and me and, say, at least half the people listening right at this second, if we all ran down to the coast and we ran down with our buckets of water, you know, great day at the beach, and we filled our buckets of water before we went and we threw them all into the ocean and then the tide rose, how many people in that group would say, wow, we just made the tide rise? There will be a few, and I'd have to tell them, look, unfortunately, if you think throwing a bucket of water into the sea made the tide rise, you're really, really simple. You need to, you know, look at
the... Are you saying the scheme is too small to affect the overall housing
prices
market?
Prices are rising anyway. In fact, I was at a...
But they're rising at a relatively low rate.
Look, I was at the Banking Payments Federation this morning. Every 3 months, they have a meeting where they bring in, you know, some of the core people in the mortgage industry, and we look at some of the statistics. Now, I can't tell you much beyond what it involves, except to say that one of the things that we were looking at today was a chart that had actually been drawn up by Goodbody Stockbrokers, where they looked at the amount of houses available and the amount of people in different income categories that could afford it. And the one where everyone can afford it, but they can't buy, is actually in the kind of sub €250,000 house. And that's like the majority of normal people. So they can't afford housing. Now, what's interesting, though, is that a huge amount of institutional buyers are coming in to fill that void. So we're saying, oh, you can't get a mortgage. You know, God forbid you borrow too much. But we will let an institutional buyer come in. They will create a scheme that will never be for sale. It will only be for rent. And then these people who can afford rent will be renting there. It'll be a nice property, don't get me wrong, but they'll never own it. They'll never experience a lifetime savings effect that owning a home outright does. They have put off home ownership, which puts off having kids. Like,
and they won't have the security and the things that go with home ownership.
Puts off having a pension. When they do have children, they'll be living with them when they're still 65. You know, that's big. That's so much bigger than what we have right now. But it's like we're on a conveyor belt of issues. And because we're at the front, we can only see what's in front of us. Wait until this stuff starts dropping off the other end, and then you're going to see some serious problems.
I think we are on a conveyor belt of issues, and I think that's very true. I mean, one of the things that has been across the news all the week is the lack of small units, one and two beds, all of that. You know, the traditional model of housing estates is kind of broken for what we need now. We need smaller units. Families are not what they were. Do we need a different approach in general? I mean, that the Rebuilding Ireland scheme is one thing, and there are many things. And 53106 is the text line. If you're somebody who is applying for this, I'd love to know where you're at with it. I'd love to know how you feel if it all does come down. I mean, Owen Murphy, we do have a statement from Owen Murphy, and it says, the housing minister says that the Rebuilding Ireland home loan scheme has not run out of money. The €200 million government-backed mortgage for first-time buyers was launched 13 months ago, and the Department of Housing states that more funding will be needed, but that it is not frozen. I think that the idea, I think, is that they're going to bring more finances online, although we don't know for sure how much it is or when it's going to happen.
If people have been approved, of course that's what they're going to do. They're hardly going to shut it down and wreck someone's life like that when it is such a clear, obvious, right choice to fill the void. Let me tell you something. I have a text here. I know I'm not meant to bring my phone into studio, but I did it anyway, Kira. You can beat me up during the ad break. I have a text from my little brother in Arkansas. He builds houses over there. And I was asking him, what's it like? He says, oh, it's handy enough. When you build a single family home, you get a permit within about 1 to 7 business days, providing the right papers, permit, survey, and site plan. A week. Okay? A week. And then they're able to build fast, efficiently, cheaply. And fast planning doesn't mean low quality, by the way, because they still have to have like a really regimented inspection scheme. He's just finished building his own house, and he said the inspector was in and caught things that he didn't even know was wrong, and he's a builder. So you can have a great scheme, But what you can't have is the kind of crap that goes on here where everyone and their brother gets to have a say in what your planning permission is. Stop it dead. Let's go sign a petition. Let's save the geese.
We're having that exact issue in Drimna at the moment. We've had it previously in Griffith Avenue, that these are areas close to the city, served by public transport, walking, cycling distance from town. And the objections are probably going to stop development.
Yeah, it's madness.
I'm being followed on Twitter by people from Drimna saying, why are you vilifying us? Build houses close to town in high density. That is the solution,
but
surely,
you know,
to our problems.
Here's a message to the people in Drimna. Go sit in a pineapple, because it is not appropriate to build a Lewis, to have all of the infrastructure there for them to enjoy it and get their high house prices, and then deny everybody else at the same time. Like, if you don't like it, don't live in a city. Here's the message. There is a place called the Boreen. You can go there. You can sell your house. You'll afford three houses in the Boreen. But go there if you don't like other people. If that's not the case, then stop trying to hold on to all the good stuff in such a miserable, tight-hearted, crap fashion.
I'd love to try and disagree with you and rein you in, but actually I agree. Let's look at the text line. People are saying, Ciara, can you say how many people actually have gotten a loan from this scheme? My son and my wife are paying €1,000 per month for a rundown, damp house in rent. He has a good full-time job and was made to run circles around himself to get through a building Ireland, but was denied. It is an illusion. My understanding is that about 1,500 people have been approved and about nearly 600 have drawn down. Am I right in those figures, Carl?
It's thereabouts, to be honest with you, because they're not part of the regular banking system. I can only go on what's written in the press. I do know that on the old system, it used to also have brokers involved in it, and we would pass people on to that scheme. The numbers were very low. What I would say in Owen Murphy's defence is that there was a scheme almost identical to it for the last 8 years. It only ever did like 5 loans a year, and this one has punched out over 1,000. So that is a massive, you know, times 100 ramping up.
So you think overall this has been a success, and perhaps we reached the ceiling of money that was allocated sooner than we thought, but that it has overall worked reasonably well?
That's what success looks like. It's helped a load of people more so than we thought.
Someone is saying, can you please ask Carl, where do people who live in a Boreen work?
I don't care where they work. Do whatever you want. I'm not there to tell you what you can and can't work. What I am saying is, if you want to live in the city, you get city vista. You get city environment. You also get things like the Lewis on your doorstep. Do you like it? Good. So does everyone else. Share it. Don't be so miserable.
Well, yeah, I suppose people... Anyway, look, I'm inclined to say build as well. Wouldn't one of the solutions be, though, the government owns, and I've seen the figure, I've seen different figures, but the figure I see consistently enough is about 700 sites, land pockets around, for example, Dublin, but it has similar pockets of land throughout the country and throughout our other big towns and cities.
Massive, yeah.
Why couldn't some of that be freed up for development, for building? It doesn't make sense.
I don't know why.
You're the expert, Carl. That's okay. Why we bring you in. We bring you in for the sugar.
Okay, I can tell you why. I can tell you why, because it's just it is just mismanagement of state assets. I think that what the state should do is look at all their sites and grant themselves planning tomorrow. Just say, look, we are the authority. We're granting ourselves planning for everything. And then every week, they can go to all these different sites and say, look, this one is going to be apartments, this one is going to be creches, this one is going to be shops, and we're going to put three of them up for auction every single week. Now, it's not going to be an auction where you get to like just buy the land for cheap. You get the land for free. And people say, no, you can't do that. Hold on for a second. That land at the moment is actually costing them because they have to keep it secure. It's blank. There's nothing there. What you do is you say the site's free and we award construction contracts to people based on the lowest price. Whoever comes in at the best price, you build that and get started. And if you make your money, fine. When it's done, the state can then pay them that money or let them have part of it as profit or rent some of it out or do something. But what happens after that is you start to collect rates, you start to collect local property tax, you invigorate the power of local authorities to be viable businesses
again. Are we not slightly concerned, Carl? We have seen in this country before that the lowest tender for construction of things isn't always the cheapest at the end of the day. And what actually happens is that people come in potentially with a low ball bid, they get the tender, and suddenly all the add-ons and the thing is costing a fortune. And we've seen that there's a historical...
Children's Hospital, like you need not look any further.
We don't want to point out any specific one, but you know, in the Children's Hospital, there were things that were changed post-design
that's
to be given some credit there.
And I'm not having a go with them, but I am saying that that's an example of contract inflation. What you would have to do is just be very, very strict on the design before you bring these sites out. You would have to be very, very strict on your building control amendment regulations, all of these things, and then really nail it down. And there's a thing in the contract called a PC sum, a pricing and costing sum, and it covers things that are outside the contract, and you really just need to be super stringent on them. But that's the same if you're building a shed for yourself as if you're building a block of condos. It doesn't make a difference.
Equally, if we freed up land and the land was in greater supply, presumably the overall cost of land, etc., would be falling.
It would be pushed down and held down.
Wouldn't it have to be?
That would make a big difference. You see, people are saying, why don't we compulsory purchase? Why don't we go after the developers? The developers are small fry. I mean, imagine if you were saying, right, I have to feed a whole village. Now, I've got five elephants. Actually, elephant's a bad word. I'm not going to get into saying you kill elephants. Say there's five whatever you can shoot and eat. Or you can go after six squirrels. You know, you go for what the big game is. And that's the state. The state actually has the most land. They've got the ability to do it too.
Is the state afraid to release some of its hoarded land banks, as it were, because they see them as future insurance against, I don't know what, but against something down the line?
Possibly. But let's just look at this logically. I'm gonna do a quick, let's ask Kira panel moment here. So Kira, we've come up with this plan to give away loads of land so people could build houses on it. What do you think the politicians of all the left are going to do? Jump up and down, be happy about it, scream murder, I'd imagine, no?
Why? If we're building social and affordable housing?
Well, that's exactly the caveat. They'll say, we agree with it, but it has to all be social affordable. Why not mixed? Why not all private? Like, it doesn't matter. Once you're building housing, you're building housing. We have a 4 billion euro plan for social housing. They've got to roll that out. That's up to the government to do. But the whole thing is if you increase housing, it doesn't actually matter what type you're doing, because it increases stock. It's the same argument with student housing. People say, oh, that's all student housing. No one's going to live there. Well, are students not people? Are they goldfish? Are they some kind of, extraterrestrial?
No,
because
and obviously
they won't
serving
be
some
with
need
each other
frees up competition.
To take over rented in house other that a private family can't get.
Loads of people getting involved. 53106 is the text, and we're talking about the Rebuilding Ireland loan scheme. Allegedly, it hasn't run out of money, but the more money will have to be added to continue the scheme because the uptake has been greater than was predicted. Somebody says, hi guys, my own home was sold to a vulture fund, but I have it rented out. I want to pay more on my mortgage payments, but I'm afraid the vulture fund will take it back if I want to increase payments. I'm on a tracker mortgage. Please don't mention my name. Lots of people seem to feel that they're caught in traps where they can't make changes.
No, and to be honest with you, just this week, I was part of something that is really, really huge, which is in the space of vulture funds. I can't talk about it. All I'm telling you is that there is deals out there. Liaise with them, talk to them. Don't bury your head in the sand.
All right. Someone else says, Carl is a mortgage broker, so of course he's in favour of more mortgages, and that's from Jer. I think most people are in favour of people being able to buy their own home.
By the way, correct Jer? Please come back to earth. I don't do these mortgages. They don't make me money. I should be against these because it's my competitor. I should be looking for some subprime lender to come in and do this.
Someone else, however, says, I love Carl's attitude. Someone else says, I believe the council have been very careful with these loans to make sure people who are getting them are able to repay them. My son got one. He's a teacher, but they took his pay and his ability to repay into account when calculating how much to advance to him. I think that's true, but I do think, as Carl mentioned, we are sort of in the subprime space here and it's difficult. John, one of our listeners, is on the line. John, pop on your cans there, Carl. John, you have some proposed solutions.
Well, I just had a couple of points. If the government is running out of money, they could issue a 20-year bond, government bond, at 1.5%, which leaves them a 0.5% margin to manage the scheme. The second point would be that if something went wrong, if they increased the scheme and did this for a lot more people, then if something went wrong with the people, that they got sick or if they lost their jobs or whatever, that the houses could become shared ownership houses, which is quite common abroad, or if they couldn't pay, if they couldn't pay even from the start or soon after the start, that it could become a council house and could be simply rented to them. That the sort of houses they're talking about are modest houses, like at less than...
They are modest. They have to be below 250,000 if they're down the country, and I think 320,000 if they're in...
320,000, which is a modest price for a council house. And if, over the years, with people running into trouble, the state ended up having to take over these houses or having to share them with the people themselves, that they would be suitable for council houses.
Yeah.
But they would be mixed through the housing stock, so you wouldn't have the issues of large-scale council housing creating ghettos.
Yeah. Because they're individual buyers, John, I think that is what's going to happen, isn't it? That they would be mixed through the housing stock, because someone will pick one here and someone will pick one there. They aren't in county council estates or corporation estates in that way. I don't know. Let's ask Carl. Carl, they haven't put any kind of strictures around this scheme like that, that if you are somebody who doesn't pay back, that this will reverse to shared ownership or a council scheme or those types of things, have they?
Well, no, but it actually does happen already. There is actually in the council buyout, people who go to buy the council out, they do it, and then years later they can't afford the loan and it actually reverts to council ownership. So you would
expect... kind of a precedent?
There is a precedent there. Like, it's too early to say what will happen with these properties, but it would most likely be a case that the state, being the lender who's on the hook, will therefore look at a state type solution, which would then... might replicate something like the mortgage to rent almost.
Presumably... they'd have to have that in place from the beginning. They can't change the terms halfway through, though. They'd have to have that in place now for anyone taking on those loans
No, because the terms of the loan are repay the loan or you could face eviction. So if you've got a choice of that, or you can have your house turned into social housing, then obviously you're gonna pick to be able to stay there. Well, that's what people say they would choose. So, you know, you can just offer that as one of the solutions.
Yeah. Thank you for that, John. That's a very good input there. Thank you indeed. Someone says, Ciara, I hear the term short supply of housing stock used constantly in regard to the housing crisis. We are both Dubs and we bought a small cottage in Avoca. We commute to Dublin for work. We leave at 6 a.m. It takes an hour, which isn't that bad, all things considered. Our cottage is a one bed, but it's grand for us and our 1-year-old son, 3 dogs and 3 hens. It cost 170 grand. There are 3 cottages on our lane. They're all empty. 2 are owned by Dublin people and 1 is owned by a couple who live in the UK. I'm told this by the other neighbours, as we've been here for a year and have never seen anyone in it. It's madness. I suppose that person is saying, I can live up a boring in Avoca and
that
I can
sounds
still
like some fun living, you know. Night mama, night John boy. Go to the
but
Waltons.
Some people would quite like that, Carl, in fairness.
Yeah, and if you do, great. You see, they're doing exactly what I'm saying. If you want to live somewhere cheaper, you can always go somewhere that has that. You want to go somewhere where you get away from it all, go do it. But don't live smack dab in the middle of the city and then try to deny other people all the city infrastructure, all the city amenities that were given to you for free on your doorstep. All the people in Drimnagh, we paid for that, Lewis. We all paid for that, Lewis. They didn't. But guess whose house value went up? Theirs. Not mine, not yours. So we get nothing in return. So what I'm saying is, in return, the social dividend I want is for there to be loads of houses near that Lewis line. And if that inconveniences them, well, you know what? Again, you're on that list of people that I am not having too much empathy for, given that you're housed in a place with great infrastructure, great, you know,
they would, and they have, because they're talking to me on Twitter, and anyway, they would say
Twitter's
that they
a swamp for comments.
They
you don't can't even have, listen to half the stuff that's
they don't have the infrastructure that they would like to have. Last question for you: the 25 years at 2.5%.
Awesome.
Awesome for the customer. Awesome for the mortgage.
It's like European type rate.
Will it sort of, you know, wipe its face? Will it actually break even for the government, or is it's putting aside defaulters or what have you? Is that a viable model of lending?
If there's a high default rate, then no. But assuming that there's not, well, then the state can borrow at prices that no one else can. Now they can do it via the housing finance. They can do it via many other instruments that banks and other entities simply don't have access.
So it is sustainable for the state to do this.
Yeah, and not only that, like 2.25%, that's almost like getting a tracker today. A 20-year fixed rate at that price, that doesn't even exist on the continent. Actually, it does exist on the continent. I lie. You can get one for around 2%, but the rules about mortgages on the continent are so much more different than here. Like, we have high rates for a reason. So it's not only the riskiest lending being done, but it's also at the lowest rate. And that's why the scheme is oversubscribed. Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah, look, thank you very much. That is Carl Dieter, their financial advisor and analyst. 53106 is the text line. Were you involved? Did you try and get a loan from Rebuilding Ireland? Are you lucky enough to have drawn down the money? Are you going through the application? I believe the application process is long and drawn out. Do you know where you stand now? We would love to hear from you about all of this. Coming up shortly, we're going to be talking about iRexit and whether or not we would actually be better off outside the EU. Just before the break, we were talking about the Rebuilding Ireland scheme. Applications are sort of stalled. The government is saying that there may be more finances put into it, but they, in 13 months, hit the predicted number of applications that they were going to have in 3 years. I suppose that could be argued it's a big success, but I think people are very concerned that more money won't be put in. And someone has texted and said, my husband owns a small company. He earns over 40,000 a year and it's growing every year. I work also. Between rent and savings, we spend about 1,500 euros a month. The mortgage size that we're looking for is about 600 euros a month. That's very modest. We have over 10% of our deposits saved and that's growing every week. But we have been turned down for mortgage by numerous banks because my husband owns his company. Ironically, his employees have been cleared for mortgages. We were hoping to apply for this government scheme and now I just don't know. Every bank we've gone to, the person we deal with face to face tells us they see no reason that we would be turned down, but then that is what happens. That's a tough road. You should be eligible for this because your income is below the threshold for a couple and you've been turned down by others. But I suppose that's the, it's like looking into a ditch for people, and that's difficult too, the lack of certainty. One of our listeners, Peter, is on the line. Peter, what's your own story?
Hello, Ciara.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for throwing a bit of light on this because it's quite difficult to get information. So very briefly, our story is myself and my wife. We're a single income family, but a fairly high income. And we applied for a 200,000 euro mortgage with the Rebuilding Ireland investment loan because we couldn't get one from the banks.
Okay.
And we had 100,000 euro saved up as a deposit. So
good
deposit to
fair
buy.
Fair play.
Buy a 300,000 euro house. Yeah, a lot of hard work and savings and everything went into it. And anyway, we were rejected by the loan, not so much by our local authority, but by the Housing Finance Authority, which is the government department in Dublin, which really does the kind of the bean counting behind these loans. And it's very difficult to get any information from them why you've been rejected. Because if you got information why, you'd be able to maybe reapply or rejig your finances. And it is very frustrating. And I know the situation we're in is the same as quite a few people.
Yeah.
A lot of landlords are selling their rental properties at the moment.
Yeah, apparently 40% of private landlords are getting out of the market. I mean it's the rental market appears to be working for nobody.
Yes. So a lot of landlords are offering their houses to their tenants, kind of, you know, first refusal.
Yeah.
And often offering them on quite good rates. That's what the situation we were in. And although we mentioned that in our application, it was still refused. And it's difficult to understand. I mean, Carl Dieter was saying there that, you know, as long as there's not too many defaulters, that this would be a good investment for the state because the state is getting the money back. Okay, yes, it offers a good interest rate to applicants.
I know some of the criteria because we've been looking into it. So had you been turned down by ordinary commercial banks prior to applying? So you had that in your favour, as it were. And is your overall income as a couple or as an individual below the thresholds that it needs to be below?
Yeah, it's within the correct thresholds. And the reason why we're turned down by the banks, as I'm sure many people listening were, is that the banks are on the central bank requirement that they will lend only 3.5 times income, which seems very sensible after the madness of the property boom. But they also have exemptions to go higher. And if you can explain in your personal circumstances why you might be able to borrow money up to 4.5 times income, you can get an exemption, but it seems, listening to the people talking in the retail banks, that these exemptions go to property speculators. They go to people who have, maybe a lot of kind of the bank of mum and dad, et cetera, et cetera. That's anecdotally coming from mortgage advisors.
The only thing is the bank of mum and dad, what it normally provides, I know sometimes it provides a guarantor, but a lot of what it provides is in general a deposit.
Yeah.
And you have a massive, I mean, 100 grand savings is almost unheard of.
And yet, it's not unheard of according to the bank people we're talking to. And what's that going to mean now is that our landlord will sell our house. We will have to go into the rented market again locally, which has gone up hugely.
Yeah.
And that big deposit we saved up to buy a house will eventually be frittered away on rent over the next few years, which makes it then harder to get a mortgage in the future. And there just seems to be a lot of rigidity in these local authority loans.
If you meet the requirements, though, and it sounds, Peter, like you do, do they not have to tell you why they've turned you down, or is it it's opaque? There's no transparency on this. They don't have to say we didn't like the cut of your jib. They don't have to give you a reason at all. Is that kind of how this is working?
They gave us a little bit more information when we said we were going to ask a local representative's TD to inquire on our behalf. That seemed to get a bit more information. And then when the TD did inquire, she managed to get a little bit more information, maybe an extra sentence or so from the Housing Finance Authority in Dublin.
And you don't have to tell me your personal details, but what kind of road were they going that they turned you down because of?
they turned this down on basically on saying an inability to repay based on monthly repayments, which doesn't make sense because the Rebuilding Ireland loan has a very useful calculator on its website that you can put all your figures into, and it will give you a guide of what your monthly repayments will be and are. Current payments on rent and savings is well beyond that.
That is a worry. And you know what's a big worry? What you just said there, we spoke to our local TD and they, is it going to become that kind of nod and a wink rubbish again that we have in the health service as well? Oh, we'll get you a hospital bed. We'll talk to the TD. Those kinds of things. This is not the right way to go about this. But thanks for coming on, Peter. The best of luck with it. I hope something falls in your favour. And they are. It does seem there are noises that there will be more money behind the scheme. But we will await with bated breath to see what happens. John is also on the line. John, you and your partner currently live in a mobile home, and you think it's your ideal home. Tell me about your experience.
Oh, Ciara, it's been horrendous. I spoke to you on one or two occasions. We've been trying to get a mortgage since January last year. We eventually succeeded in getting a mortgage. And then we had a problem with getting the contracts off the vendors and things. And then our mortgage thing lapsed. So we didn't have enough time left. So we've had to go back and reapply. The bank that originally had given us the mortgage has said no. Their criteria has changed.
Right.
So now we're trying with other banks to get them. We applied for the home loan rebuild in Ireland thing.
Yeah.
Back, we were only looking for 150,000.
Which should be right. No. Okay.
They said no. We save like there's no tomorrow.
Well, you're living in cheap accommodation. You're in a mobile, so I presume.
We're in a mobile.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the idealest thing in the world, but like, we've got us to the point that we could save. We saved up a good deposit, and we cleared off loans. Don't forget.
You did all the good stuff.
We done all the good stuff, but as we were doing all this, we had set up a business. The business has grown to strength, to strength, to strength. Since the last time I spoke to you in the Maybank holiday last year, we've more than doubled the size of our business.
And none of this counts for anything?
None of this seems to be counting for a single thing.
So there are very tight purse strings on this Rebuilding Ireland loan as well.
It seems to be that it's only if you tick every single box, and if you don't have a single bit of debt, is the only chance that you might get.
Right. Okay.
I don't know anybody who I know a couple of people who applied for them. None of them got them.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people are texting that they know people who applied and didn't get them either. But thank you.
Yeah.
Look, best of luck to you as well. I do hear, John, the frustration in your voice. Best of luck with it. It's an awful sacrifice to move into a mobile home and live in the winter. We've had bitterly cold and all of that. And people are doing that in order to try and save, and yet they're still getting turned down despite being in employment. This is the working poor at the coalface here. We're going to take a short break, but just want to read you one more text. It says, a few of my friends got these loans and good luck to them. However, I'm just over the income threshold. As the Rebuilding Ireland loans give a higher multiple of income than the central bank allows, those Rebuilding Ireland loans can afford overall a higher property value, which means we're getting priced out of the market. Notwithstanding that my income is higher, not everyone wins with the scheme. We've been talking about this, and I wonder, would you nearly be better off to go into your employer and say, knock $3,000 off my wages and put me in a wholly different category where I'm allowed to get a loan that's going to save me maybe hundreds of thousands over the next 25 years? Wonder what you think about that. Would you take a pay cut to get a Rebuilding Ireland loan if you were able to get one? Let me know. 53106 coming up after this. IREXIT. Should we be leaving the EU too?